way into the kitchen where we practically trip over a huge graying yellow lab lying on the floor. Grayer, you know Max, right? Grayer hunkers down and with uncharacteristic gentleness rubs Max's ears. Max's tail animatedly pounds the tiles in response. I look around. Instead of the large island that Mrs. X has in the middle of the room, there's an old refectory table piled high at one end with the Times. Cookies? Anyone want cookies? H.H. asks, brandishing a Christmas tin of David's cookies that he has pulled from a teetering pile of holiday baked goods on the sideboard. Grayer runs over to help himself, and I force myself to focus. Just one, Grover. Oh, man. Do you want milk with that? He heads to the fridge and returns with a full glass. Thank you so much, I say. Hey, Grayer, anything you want to say to our host?
Thanks, he mumbles, his mouth full of cookie.
No, man, thank you. It's the least I can do after such a powerful performance. He smiles over at me. I can't remember the last time someone sang to me when it wasn't my birthday.
I can do that. I can do happy birthday.
He puts his glass down on the floor and places his hands into the jazz position in preparation. Whoa, we've done our fair share of wassailing already. I put my hand out to shield us from another round. Grayer, it's not my birthday today, but I promise I'll let you know when it is.
Teamwork. I love it.
Okay, let's go, Nanny. Gotta wassail. Let's go now.
Grayer hands H.H. his empty glass, wipes his gloved hand across his lips, and heads for the door. I stand up from the table, not really wanting to leave.
I'm sorry I never caught up with you that night. Their party ran really late.
That's all right. You didn't miss anything. The next thing was having a private party, so we just ended up getting pizza at Ruby's.
As in, the Ruby's that is exactly 20 feet from my front stoop. The irony.
How long are you home for?
I ask, without batting an eyelash.
Nanny! The elevator's here!
Just a week, and then we go to Africa. The elevator door waiting, my heart pounding.
Well, I'm around if you want to hang out this weekend, I say as I step in beside Grayer.
Yeah, great,
he says from the doorway.
Great,
I nod my head as the door slides closed.
Great,
Grayer sings as a warm-up to our next performance. Short of writing my number on a piece of paper and shoving it under his door, I leave 721 Park on Friday night knowing there is no way I am going to see H.H. before he leaves for Africa. Ugh. That night, I make Sarah, who's home for Christmas vacation, accompany me to a holiday party being given downtown by some guys in my class. The whole apartment is festively decorated in glowing jalapeno pepper lights, and someone has glued a cutout of a large penis onto the picture of Santa in the living room. It takes less than 5 minutes to decide that we don't want a Bud Light from the bathtub, a fistful of corn chips from a filmy bowl, or to take any of the frat boys up on their gracious offers of quick oral sex. We head Josh off on the stairs.
No fun? He asks.
Well, Sarah says, I love to play strip quarters as much as the next girl, but Sarah, Josh cries, giving her a hug, lead on. Several hours later, find me doing a martini-sodden rendition of the wassailing story for Sarah in a corner booth at the next thing, while Josh hits on some fashionista at the bar.
And then he gave him a cookie. That must mean something, right?
We do an interpretive dance of every subtle nuance of the entire 5-minute exchange until we have completely wrung the encounter of any meaning it might possibly have had.
So then he said great, and then I said great.
Saturday morning, I wake with my shoes still on, a killer hangover, and only one day to buy presents for my entire family, the exes, and the many little people I've taken care of over the years. The Gleason girls have already sent over 2 glitter pens and a rock with my name painted on it. I've got to get my act together. I wolf down tomato sauce on toast, drink a liter of water, grab a double shot of espresso on the corner, and bada bing, I am alive with the holiday spirit. An hour later, I emerge from Barnes & Noble Jr., a good $150 lighter, prompting me to do a little math as I walk down Park.
Forget Paris. I'm going to need that stupid bonus just to pay off Christmas. I walk down Madison to Bergdorf's to get a Rigaud candle for Mrs. X. It may be tiny, but at least she'll know it wasn't cheap. As I stand online for the all-important silver gift wrap, I try to figure out what to get the 4-year-old who has everything. What would make him really happy? Short of his father actually making an appearance to do the high-ups? Well, a nightlight, because he's scared of the dark. And maybe a bus pass holder that could keep that card protected before it completely disintegrates. As I'm on 58th and 5th, the logical thing would be to cross the street to F.A.O. Schwartz's enormous Sesame Street section to find him a Grover nightlight, but I can't. I debate which would be faster, taking the train to a Toys R Us in Queens or navigating a few thousand square feet of bedlam just a block away. Against my better judgment, I drag myself across 5th to wait in line with the entire population of Nebraska in the cold for over half an hour before being ushered into the revolving doors by a tall toy soldier.
Welcome to our world, welcome to our world, welcome to our world of toys,
blasts relentlessly from mysteriously placed speakers, making it sound as if the eerie, childlike singing is coming from within my own head. Yet it cannot drown out the tortured cries of, "But I want it! I need it!" that also fill the air. And this is only the stuffed animal floor. Upstairs is total chaos. Children are firing ray guns, throwing slime, sports equipment, and siblings. I look around at parents who share my, "Let's just get through this," expression and employees trying to make it to lunch without sustaining serious bodily injury. I slither to Sesame Street Corner, where a little girl of about 3 has prostrated herself on the floor and is sobbing for injustice everywhere.
"Maybe Santa will bring you one, Sally."
"No!" she howls.
"Can I help you?"
asks a sales girl wearing a red shirt and glazed smile. "I'm looking for a Grover nightlight."
"Oh, I think we sold out of Grover."
The last half hour of standing in line says you didn't.
"Let's take a look."
"Yes, let's." We go to the nightlight section where we are faced with an entire wall of Grover.
"Yeah, sorry, those went fast,"
she says, shaking her head as she begins to wander off.
"Yeah, this is one," I say, holding it up. "Oh, is he the blue guy?"
"Yes, he's the blue guy." Don't even get me started. No one at Barnes & Noble Jr. had even heard of Lyle Crocodile. Come on, you work in a children's bookstore. It's not like I'm asking for Hustler. I take my place in line for gift wrap and use the opportunity to practice my transcendental meditation amid more children racked with sobs. On Monday morning, Mrs. X pops her head into the kitchen while I'm cutting fruit.
"Nanny, I need you to run an errand for me. I went to Saks to pick up the gifts for our help, and like a ninny, I forgot the bonus checks. So I've put handbags on hold, and I'd like you to make sure that each check is put inside the right bag. Now I've written it all down, and the name of each person is on the outside of each envelope. Justine gets the Gucci shoulder bag, Mrs. Butters gets the Coach tote, Housekeeper gets the Le Sports sack, and the Hervé Chapeliers are for the piano and the French teachers. Make sure they gift wrap everything and then just come home in a cab."
"No problem," I say, excitedly estimating where I fit in between Gucci and Le Sports sack. Tuesday afternoon, Grayer has Allison over, an adorable Chinese girl from his class who will proudly tell anyone who asks, "I have 2 daddies."
"Hello, Nanny,"
she always says, curtsying.
"How's school? Love your shoes."
She just kills me. The phone rings as I'm rinsing out their hot carob mugs. "Hello," I say, hanging the towel neatly on the oven door.
"Nanny?"
I hear a tentative whisper.
"Yes," I whisper back, because one does. "It's Justine, from Mr. X's office. I'm so glad I got you. Can you do me a favor?"
"Sure," I whisper.
Mr. X asked me to go pick out some things for Mrs. X, and I don't know her size or what designer she likes or the colors. She sounds genuinely panicked.
I don't know, I say, surprised to find I don't have her measurements committed to memory.
Wait, hold on. I go pick up the extension in the master bedroom. Justine?
Yes,
she whispers. Is she under her desk?
In the ladies' room?
Okay, I'm going in the closet. Her closet is actually a large chocolate-brown dressing room complete with a long velvet bench. Mrs. X's paranoia is such that I'm sure she's convinced I not only snoop around in here on a daily basis, but am in fact wearing her underwear right now. On the contrary, I'm in a cold sweat and debate putting Justine on hold again so I can call Mrs. X on her cell phone to confirm that she's really, really far away. Regardless, I start gently riffling the merchandise and answering Justine's questions. Size 2, Herrera, Yves Saint Laurent, shoe size 7.5, Ferragamo, Chanel. Her purses are Hermes, no outside pockets, and she hates zippers. I don't know, pearls maybe? She likes pearls. And so on and so forth.
You've been a lifesaver, she gushes.
Oh, one more thing. Is Grayer doing chemistry?
Chemistry?
Yeah, Mr. X told me to go buy him a chemistry set and some Gucci slippers.
Right. We both laugh. The Lion King, I say. He loves anything to do with the Lion King, Aladdin, Winnie the Pooh. He's 4.
Thanks again, Nanny. Merry Christmas.
After clicking off, I take one last look around at the tower of cashmere sweaters, each one wrapped with tissue and individually stored in its own clear drawer. The wall of shoes, each stuffed with a satin triangle. The racks of fall, winter, and spring suits, going from lightest to darkest, from left to right. I tentatively pull open a drawer. Each pair of panties, every bra, every pair of stockings is individually packed in a Ziploc baggie and labeled bra, Hanro, white. Stockings, Fogal, black. The doorbell rings and I jump about 16 feet, panting with relief when I hear Grayer let Henry, Allison's father, in. I slide the drawer shut and walk calmly out to the hall, where a bemused Henry is watching Grayer and Allison trying to tag each other with their scarves. Okay, Allie, I have to get dinner started. Let's get it together. He finally catches her, steadying her between his knees to tie her scarf. I hand over her small, Loden coat as Henry secures her hat and ushers her into the vestibule. Say goodbye to Allison, Grayer. I nudge him, and he waves frenetically with both hands.
Goodbye, Grayer. Thank you for a lovely afternoon. Au revoir, Nanny,
she cries as the elevator opens.
Thanks, Nan, Henry says, turning and accidentally swinging one of Allison's boots right into another member of the X family.
Oh!
Mrs. X flinches. I'm so sorry, Henry says as Allison buries her head in his neck.
No, please. I'm fine. Did you all have a good time?
Yes, Grayer and Allison shout. Well, Henry says, I better get back and start dinner. Richard will be home soon, and I need to get the ornaments down. Your nanny's day off? She asks with a knowing smile. Oh, we don't have a nanny.
You have 2 daddies to do the high-ups,
Grayer interrupts him. My goodness, Mrs. X says quickly. However do you manage? Well, you know, they're only this age once. Yes. She looks a little pinched. Grayer, say goodbye.
I already did, Mommy. You're late. The door slides shut.
Much later that night, I ride down in the elevator half asleep, entertaining the fantasy of walking along the Seine humming La Vie en Rose. It's 12:20 on the 22nd, only 24 more hours to go until a month off and money in my pocket. Night, James, I say to the doorman just as he opens the door for H.H., rosy-cheeked and carrying a food emporium bag. Hey there, just get off work? He asks,
smiling.
Yup.
Please don't let me have steamed chard between my teeth. That was some fine wassailing. You train him?
Impressed?
I ask carefully, with my upper lip curled down.
Enough patter. When's the date?
Listen, he says, loosening his scarf. Are you doing anything right now? 'Cause I just have to run upstairs. My mom's in a Christmas baking frenzy and we ran out of vanilla.
Oh, now?
Okay. Now works for me.
Yeah, great.
As the numbers go from 1 to 11 and back again, I quickly run to the beveled mirror and groom like a madwoman. I hope I'm not boring. I hope he's not boring. I try to remember if I shaved this morning. Ugh, I'll be so bummed if he's boring. And let's try not sleeping with him. Tonight. I'm applying a furtive swipe of lip gloss as the elevator approaches L. Hey, have you eaten yet? He asks as James opens the door for us. Night, James. I call over my shoulder. It depends on what you mean by eating. If you consider a fistful of goldfish and a few dry tortellini a meal, then I'm stuffed. What are you up for?
Well, I think for a moment.
The only places with open kitchens right now are coffee shops and pizza. Take your pick. Pizza sounds good. Is that okay? Anything not in this building sounds fabulous. Here, sit on my jacket, he says as he closes the empty pizza box. The Metropolitan Museum steps are cold, and it's starting to seep up through my jeans.
Thanks.
I tuck his blue fleece under me and look down Fifth Avenue at the twinkling holiday lights of the Stanhope Hotel. H.H. pulls the container of Ben and Jerry's fish food out of a brown paper bag. So what's it like working on the ninth floor?
Exhausting and weird, I look back at him. That apartment has all the holiday warmth of a meat locker, and Grayer has a lone styrofoam snowman hanging in his closet because she won't let him put it anywhere else.
Yeah, she's always struck me as a little high-strung.
You have no idea. And with the holidays, it's like working for a drill sergeant with ADD.
Come on, it can't be that bad.
He nudges me with his knees.
Excuse me? I used to babysit in the building. You eat some food, play some games. Oh my God, that is not my job at all. I spend more time with this kid than anybody. I slide an inch away from him on the step.
What about the weekends?
They have somebody in Connecticut. They're only alone with him for the drive out and back, and they do that at night so he's asleep. There's no coming together. I thought maybe they were just waiting for a holiday, but apparently not. Mrs. X is having Christmas by herself at Barney's, so she's been sending us all over town with the rest of America, mind you, just to get him out of the house.
But there's so much cool stuff to do with a kid this time of year.
He's 4. He slept through the Nutcracker, the Rockettes scared the shit out of him, and he developed some kind of weird heat rash while waiting for 3 hours to see Santa at Macy's. But mostly, we just stand in line for the bathroom. Everywhere. Not a cab to be found, not a...
Sounds like you've definitely earned some ice cream. He hands me a spoon. I have to laugh.
I'm sorry. You're the first grown-up without shopping bags that I've talked to in a good 48 hours. I'm just a little Christmased out at the moment.
Oh, don't say that.
This is such an awesome time of year to be living in the city. All the lights and the people.
He gestures to the sparkling Christmas decorations on Fifth Avenue. It makes you appreciate that we're lucky enough to live here year-round. I dig into the carton, tracing a swirl of caramel.
You're right. Up until 2 weeks ago, I would have said it was my favorite time of year.
We pass the fish food back and forth and look over at the wreaths in the Stanhope's windows and the little white bulbs burning on the awning.
You seem like a holiday kind of girl.
I blush.
Well, Arbor Day is really when I go all out.
He laughs. Oh, sweet God, you are hot.
He leans in. So, do you still think I'm an asshole?
I never said you were an asshole. I smile back. Just an asshole by association.
Well, he's kissing me.
Hi, he says softly, his face still almost touching mine.
Hi.
Can we please start over and put Dorian's really, really far behind us? I smile. Hi, I'm Nan.
Nanny? Nanny?
Right, what?
Your turn. It's your turn.
Poor G. This is the third time he's had to snap me back from the steps of the Met where my brain has taken up permanent residence. I move my gingerbread man from an orange square to a yellow square. Okay, Grove, but this is the last game, and then we've got to try on those clothes. Oh, man. Come on, it'll be fun. You can do a little fashion show for me. The bed is piled with Grayer's wardrobe from last summer, and we need to figure out what, if anything, still fits so that he can be properly outfitted for his vacation. I know putting together a resort wardrobe is hardly how he wants to spend his last afternoon with me, but orders are orders. After we put away the game, I kneel on the floor and help him in and out and in and out of shorts, shirts, swimming trunks, and the world's tiniest navy blue blazer.
Ow! Too small. It hurts.
His arm chub has been compressed like a hot dog bun with a rubber band around the middle by the little white Lacoste tee. Okay, okay, I'm getting you out. Be patient. I peel him out of the shirt and hold up a stiff Brooks Brothers Oxford.
I don't like that one so much,
he says, shaking his head. Then slowly,
I think it's too small, he says intently.
I look down at the buttons on the sleeve and the starched collar. Yeah, I think you're right. Way too small. You probably shouldn't wear it anymore, I say conspiratorially, folding the offending item and putting it on the reject pile.
Nanny, I'm bored.
He puts his hands on either side of my face.
No more shirts. Let's play Candyland.
Come on, just one more, G. I help him into the blazer. Now walk down to the end of the room and back. Let me see how gorgeous you are. He looks at me like I'm crazy, but starts to walk away, looking back over his shoulder every few steps to make sure I'm not up to something. Work it, baby, I shout when he reaches the wall. He turns and eyes me warily until I whip out an imaginary camera and pretend to take pictures. Come on, baby, you're fabulous. Show it off. He takes his jazz hands pose at the end of the carpet. Woohoo! I catcall as if Marcus Schenkenberg had just lost his towel. He giggles, throwing himself into the show as we make pouty lips at each other. You're gorgeous, darling, I say, leaning down to take off the blazer and kissing the air by both his cheeks.
You'll be back really soon, right, Nanny?
He shakes his arm free.
Tomorrow?
Here, let's look at the calendar again so you can see how fast it's going to go, and you'll be in the Bahamas.
Light fur K, he corrects.
Right. We lean in to look at the nanny calendar I made. And then Aspen, where there'll be real snow, and you can sled and make snow angels and a snowman. You're going to have an awesome time. Hello? I hear Mrs. X call out. Grayer runs to the front hall, and I take a moment to fold the last little shirt and then follow him. How was your afternoon? She asks brightly. Grayer was a very good boy. We tried on everything, I say, leaning against the doorway. The pile on the bed is the stuff that fits. Oh, excellent. Thank you so much. Grayer is bouncing up and down in front of Mrs. X and pulling on her mink.
Come see my show. Come in my room.
Grayer, what have we discussed? Have you washed your hands? She asks, evading his grasp.
No,
he answers. Well, then, should you be touching Mommy's coat? Now, if you sit on the bench, I have a surprise for you from Daddy. She rummages through her shopping bags as Grayer slumps onto the paisley cushion. She pulls out a bright blue sweatsuit. Remember how you're going to big boys' school next year? Well, Daddy just loves collegiate. She flips the sweatshirt around to reveal the orange lettering. I step forward to help Grayer pull it over his head. She stands back while I roll the sleeves up into little donuts at his wrists. Oh, you are going to make your daddy so happy. Grayer, delighted, whips out his jazz hands and starts to pose as he had done in the bedroom. Honey,
Don't fling your arms about. She looks down at him in consternation. It's weird. Grayer looks to me for an explanation. Mrs. X follows his gaze. Grayer, it's time to say goodbye to Nanny.
I don't want to.
He stands in front of the door and crosses his arms. I kneel down. It's only for a few weeks, G.
No, don't go. You said we could play Candyland. Nanny, you promised.
The tears start to roll down his cheeks. Hey, you want your present now? I ask. I go in the closet, take a deep breath, put on a big smile, and pull out the shopping bag I brought with me. This is for you. Merry Christmas, I say, handing Mrs. X the Bergdorf's box.
You shouldn't have, she says, setting it down on the table.
Oh, we have something for you, too. I look surprised. Oh, no. Grayer, go get Nanny's present. He runs off. I pull the other box out of the bag. And this is for Grayer.
Nanny, here's your present, Nanny. Merry Christmas, Nanny.
He comes running in holding a Saks box and thrusts it at me.
Oh, thank you. Where's mine? Where's mine?
He jumps up and down. Your mom has it, and you can open it after I leave. I quickly pull on my coat as Mrs. X is already holding the elevator. Merry Christmas, she says as I get in.
Bye, Nanny,
he says, waving wildly like a marionette.
Bye, Grayer. Merry Christmas.
I can't even wait till I get outside. I'm imagining Paris and handbags and many trips to Cambridge. First, I open the gift tag. Dear Nanny, I don't know what we would do without you. Love, the X's. I rip the wrapping paper, pull the box apart, and start grabbing fistfuls of tissue. There's no envelope. Oh, my God. There's no envelope! I shake the box upside down. Tons of tissue come cluttering out, and then something black and furry falls to the elevator floor with a thud. I drop to my knees like a dog over a bone. I reach down, pushing the mess I've made aside to uncover my treasure and it's earmuffs. Only earmuffs. Just earmuffs. Earmuffs. Earmuffs! Mammy felt that she owned the O'Haras, body and soul. That their secrets were her secrets, and even a hint of mystery was enough to set her upon the trail so recklessly as a bloodhound. Gone with the Wind. Chapter 5. Downtime. Grandma's been looking all over for you so we can cut the cake, I say, stepping into my grandmother's dressing room, where my father has found respite from the joint New Year's Eve / 50th birthday party she insisted on throwing for the one son God blessed her with. Quick, close the door. I'm not ready yet. Too many of those people out there. Despite the many mingling artists and writers, the majority of attendees this evening are donning tuxedos, which is the one thing, as my father will emphatically inform you, he does not wear. Or anyone. Ever. Who are we, the goddamn Kennedys? Has been his thoughtful retort whenever my grandmother attempted to involve him in the planning of this black tie affair. I, on the other hand, never have to be asked twice to step into a gown, and am all too eager for the rare occasions on which I can hang up my sweatpants and head out like a lady. Not to be too much of an enabler, but I come bearing gifts, I say, handing him a glass of champagne. He smiles and takes a long gulp, placing the glass down on top of her mirrored dressing table beside his propped-up feet. He drops the Times crossword he's been working on, motioning for me to sit. I plop onto the plush cream carpet in a pile of black chiffon and take a sip out of my own flute while muffled laughter and big band music wafts in. Dad, you really should come out. It's not so bad. That writer guy is here, the one from China, and he's not even wearing a tie. You could hang out with him. He takes off his glasses. I'd rather spend time with my daughter. How's it going, Pixie? Feeling better? A fresh wave of rage washes over me,
breaking the celebratory mood I've enjoyed for most of the evening. Ugh, that woman! I slump forward.
I worked like 80 hours a week for the past month, and for what? I'll tell you for what. Earmuffs!
I sigh exasperatedly, looking out through my hair to where the row of black kitten heels along the wall transitions into a colorful array of Chinese slippers. Ah, yes, it's been a whole 15 minutes since we had this conversation. What conversation? My mother asks as she slips in the door with a plate of hors d'oeuvres in one hand and an open bottle of champagne in the other.
I'll give you a clue, he says, wryly, while holding up his glass for a refill. You wear them instead of a hat.
God, are we back on this again? Come on, Nan, it's New Year's Eve. Why don't you take a night off? She falls back on the chaise, tucking her stocking feet up under her, and hands him the plate. I sit up and reach for the bottle.
Mom, I can't. I can't let it go. She might as well have just spit in my face and put a bow on my nose. Everyone knows you get a hefty Christmas bonus. It's just how it's done. Why else would I have put in so much extra time? The bonus is for the extra. It's the recognition. Every stupid person that works for them got money and a handbag, and I got
earmuffs. They chime in as I pour myself another glass.
You know what my problem is? I go out of my way to make it seem natural that I'm raising her son while she's at the manicurist. All the little stories I tell and the, sure, I'd be happy to's, make her feel like I live there. And then she forgets that I'm doing a job. She's totally convinced herself she's letting me come over for a play date.
I grab a bit of caviar from Dad's plate. What do you think, Mom? I think you've got to confront this woman and lay down the law or let it go already. Honestly, you should hear yourself. You've been talking about this for days. You're wasting a perfectly good party on her. And somebody in this family, other than your grandmother, should take advantage of the band out there and dance. She looks pointedly at my dad as he pops the last crab puff in his mouth.
I want to. I want to lay down the law, but I don't even know where to begin.
What's to begin? Just tell her that this is not working for you, and if she wants you to continue as Grayer's nanny, then a few things are going to change.
Right, I say with a snort. When she asks me how my vacation was, I just launch into a diatribe, she would slap me.
Well, then you're really in business, Dad pipes in, because you can sue for assault and none of us will ever have to work again. My mother, now fully involved, plows on.
Then you just smile warmly, put your arm around her, and say, gee, you make it hard to work for you. Let her know in a friendly way that this is not okay behavior. Mom, you have no idea who I'm working for. There is no putting your arm around this woman. She's the ice queen.
All right, that's it. Throw her the mink, Mom commands. It's rehearsal time.
These rehearsals are the cornerstone of my upbringing and have helped me to practice everything from college interviews to breaking up with my sixth grade boyfriend. Dad tosses me the stole that's been hanging next to him and reaches over to pour us another round.
Okay, you're Mrs. X, I'm you. Hit it.
I clear my throat. Welcome back, Nanny. Would you mind taking my dirty underwear with you to Grayer's swimming class and scrubbing it while you're in the pool? Thanks so much. The chlorine just works wonders. I pull the mink up around my shoulders and affect a fake smile. My mother's voice is calm and rational. I want to help you. I want to help Grayer. But I need some help from you so that I can keep doing my job to the best of my abilities. And this means that we need to try together to make sure that I am working the hours upon which we both agreed.
Oh, you work here? I thought we had adopted you. I raise my pinky to my mouth in mock alarm.
Well, while it would be an honor to be related to you, I am here to do a job, and if I'm going to be able to keep doing it, then I know you'll be more conscious of respecting my boundaries from now on.
Dad claps loudly. I fall back on the floor.
That'll never work, I groan.
Nan, this woman's not God. She's just a person.
You need a mantra. You need to go in there like Lao Tzu. Say no to say yes. Say it with me. I say no to say yes. I say no to say yes. I murmur with her as I stare up at the floral wallpaper on the ceiling. Just as we hit a fever pitch, the door flies open and music floods the room. I roll my head to see my grandmother, cheeks flushed to match her layers of red satin, leaning against the doorframe.
Darlings! Another masterpiece of a party, and my son's hiding in the closet at his 50th, just like he did at his 5th.
Come, dance with me. In a cloud of perfume, she sashays over to my father and kisses him on the cheek.
Come on, birthday boy. You can leave your tie and cummerbund here, but at least dance a mambo with your mother before the clock strikes 12.
He rolls his eyes at the rest of us, but the champagne has worn him down. He pulls off his tie and stands up.
And you, lady, she looks down on me sprawled at her feet. Bring the mink and let's boogie.
Sorry to disappear, Gran. It's just this whole earmuffs thing.
Good Lord! Between your father and his tuxedo and you and your earmuffs, I don't want to discuss apparel with this family again until next Christmas. Up and at 'em, gorgeous. The dance floor awaits.
Mom helps me to my feet, whispering in my ear as we follow them back to the party. See? No to say yes. Your dad's chanting it right now. Many dances and bottles of champagne later, I float back to my apartment in a bubbly haze. George slides up to my heels as soon as I unlock the door, and I carry him back to my corner of the room. Happy New Year, George, I mumble as he purrs under my chin. Charlene left this morning for Asia, and I am giddy with the 3 weeks of little freedoms this affords me. As I kick off my heels, I see the light on my answering machine flashing in a soft blur. Mrs. X. What do you think, George? Shall we risk it? I bend over to let him down before pressing the new message button.
Hi, Nan. This is a message for Nan. I think this is the right number.
H.H.'s slurred voice fills the apartment.
Oh, my God! I scream, turning to check my appearance in the mirror. Right. So, yeah, I'm just calling to say Happy New Year. I'm in Africa. And wait, what time is it there? 7 hours? That's 10, 11, 12. Right. So I'm with my family, and we're about to head into the bush. And we've been having some beers with the guides. And it's the last outpost with a phone. But I just wanted to say that I bet you had a hard week. See? I know how you've been working hard, and I just wanted you to know, that I know that you do work hard, that is, and that you have a happy new year. Okay, so then I hope this is your machine. Right. So that's all. Just wanted you to know. Bye.
I stumble to my bed in utter euphoria. Oh, my God. I mumble again in the darkness before passing out with a grin plastered to my face.
Ring, 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 ring.
Hi, you've reached Charlene and Nan. Please leave a message. Beep.
Hi, Nanny. I hope you're in. I'm sure you're probably in. Well, Happy New Year!
I crack one eye open. It's Mrs. X. I hope you've had a good vacation. I'm calling because...
Jesus, it's 8 o'clock in the morning.
Well, there's been a change of plans. Mr. X apparently needs to go back to Illinois for work. And I, well, Grayers, we're all very disappointed. So anyway, we won't be going to Aspen, and I wanted to see what you're up to for the rest of the month.
On New Year's Day.
I stick my hand outside the covers and start flailing for the phone. I unplug the receiver and throw it on the floor. There. I pass out again.
Ring, 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 ring.
Hi, you've reached Charlene and Nan. Please leave a message. Beep.
Hi, Nanny. It's Mrs. X. I left you a message earlier.
I crack one eye open.
I don't know if I mentioned, but if you could let me know today. Jesus, it's 9:30 in the morning, on New Year's Day.
I stick my hand outside the covers and start flailing for the phone, and this time actually manage to pull the right plug out.
Ah,
peace.
Hi, you've reached Charlene and Nan. Please leave a message. Beep.
Hi, Nanny. It's Mrs. X.
Jesus. It's 10 o'clock in the morning. What is wrong with you people? This time, I can hear Grayer crying in the background. Not my problem. Not my problem. Earmuffs. I stick my hand outside the covers and start flailing for the answering machine. I find the volume.
Because you didn't say if you had any plans, and I just thought...
Ah, silence.
Ring, 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 ring. What the fuck?
Oh my God, it's my cell phone. It's my goddamn cell phone.
Ring, 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 ring.
Ah! I get out of bed, but I can't find the source of the goddamn ringing. Such a headache.
Ring, 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 ring.
It's under the bed. It's under the bed. I start trying to crawl under the bed, still in my evening dress, to where George made a soccer goal with the cell. I extend my arm, grab it still ringing, and throw it in the laundry hamper, dumping everything on the floor in on top of it. Aha! Sleep!
Ring, 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 ring.
I get out of bed, march over to the hamper, retrieve the phone, go in the kitchen, open the freezer door, throw in the phone, and go back to sleep. I awake 5 hours later to a very patient George waiting at the end of my bed for breakfast. He tilts his head and meows. Been on a bender? He seems to ask. I pad to the kitchen in my very rumpled black chiffon to feed George and make some coffee. I open the freezer and see the green glow of the phone from behind the ice trays. Number of calls received. 12, the face reads. Oh, Lord. I make some coffee and go sit on my bed to listen to the messages on my machine.
Hi again. Hope I'm not repeating myself. So Mr. X has decided he won't be able to make it to Aspen, and I really don't want to be out there by myself. The groom and the groundsman live all the way down the road, and, well, I'd feel very isolated, so I'll be in the city. Anyway, I'd appreciate it if you could come in a few days a week. How's Monday for you? Let me know. The number here again is...
I don't even think or chant. I just reassemble the phone and dial the number for the Lyford K Inn.
Hello?
Mrs. X?
Hi, it's Nanny. How are you?
Oh, God, the weather here is just awful. Mr. X has barely been able to play a round of golf, and now he'll be missing his skiing as well. Grayer's been trapped inside the whole time, and they promised us someone full-time, like last year, but there's a shortage or something. I don't know what I'm going to do. I can hear Pocahontas in the background.
So, did you get my message?
Yes. I brace my pounding temples between my thumb and pinky finger.
You know, I think there's something wrong with your phone. You really should have it looked at. I was trying to call you all morning. Anyway, Mr. X is leaving today, but I'm staying the weekend and won't be back until Monday. Our plane gets in at 11, so could you meet us at the apartment at noon?
Well, actually,
earmuffs.
I already made plans since I wasn't supposed to start back until the last Monday of the month.
Oh, couldn't you at least give me a week or two?
Well, the thing is, can you hold on a moment?
It sounds like she's put her hand over the phone. We don't have another video.
Mr. X says something I can't quite make out.
Well, play it for him again,
she hisses.
Mrs. X?
Yes? I know we'll be having this conversation for the next 36 hours unless I reach for a small white one. I took your suggestion about Paris, so I can't start back until, let's see, 2 weeks from Monday, until the 18th.
No to say yes.
Also, we didn't really have time before you left to discuss how much more an hour I'd be getting this year.
Uh-huh.
Well, typically,
I go up $2 every January. I hope that's not a problem. Well, no, no, of course. I'll talk to Mr. X. Also, I'd appreciate if you could go by the apartment tomorrow, you know, while you're out and about, and refill the humidifiers. I'm actually going to be on the West Side, so great! See you in 2 weeks. But please do let me know if you can start any sooner.
James holds the door open as I pass.
Happy New Year, Nanny. What are you doing back so soon?
He seems surprised to see me. Mrs. X needs her humidifiers filled, I say.
Oh, does she now?
He gives a wicked grin. The first thing I notice when I open the X's front door is that the heat is actually on. I step slowly into the silence, feeling a bit like a thief. I am just slipping my arms out of my coat when Ella Fitzgerald's Miss Otis Regrets comes blaring out of the stereo system. I freeze. Hello? I call. I clutch my backpack and follow the wall into the kitchen, hoping to grab a knife. I've heard about doormen in buildings like this using the apartments when the tenants are away. I swing open the kitchen door. There's an open bottle of Dom Perignon on the counter. Pots are bubbling on the stove. What kind of sick person steals into an apartment to cook?
It's not ready yet. Ce n'est pas fini,
a man says in a thick French accent as he emerges from the maid's bathroom, drying his hands on his checked trousers and adjusting his white chef's coat. Who are you? I ask over the music, taking a step backward toward the door. He looks up.
Qui êtes-vous?
He asks, putting his hands on his hips. I work here. Who are you?
Je m'appelle Pierre. Your mistress hired me to fait le dîner.
He returns to chopping fennel. The kitchen is a phantasm of productivity and delicious aromas. It's never looked so happy.
Why you stand there like a fish? Go!
He waves his knife at me. I leave the kitchen to go find Mrs. X. I cannot believe she's back. Of course, why bother to call Nanny? Oh, no, it's not like I have anything better to do than keep her oil paintings moist. Oh, I am definitely not working tonight if that's her game. It's probably just one big ruse to get me to work. She's probably got Grayer tied up in a net over the humidifier and is planning to drop him on my head the minute I pour the water in. She ran to the man who had led her so far astray. The stereo blares, following me from room to room. Well, fine. I'll just let her know I came by like I said I would, and then I'm out of here. Hello? I practically leap right out of my skin. There she is, strutting out of the bedroom, a silk kimono tied carelessly at her waist, her emerald earrings sparkling in the hall light. My heart jumps to my throat. It's Ms. Chicago. Hi, she says, as friendly as she was in the conference room 3 weeks ago. She glides past me out toward the dining room. Hi, I say, scampering behind her, untying my scarf. I round the corner just as she throws open the French doors onto the dining room, revealing a table set for a romantic dinner for two. A huge bouquet of peonies, the purpley black of squid ink, sits among a ring of glowing votives. She leans across the gleaming mahogany to straighten the silverware. I'm just here for the humidifiers, I call out over the stereo. Wait, she says, going over to the hidden control panel in the bookcase and expertly adjusting the volume, tone, and bass. There, she turns to me, smiling placidly. What were you saying? The humidifiers are, dry. They run out of water. And the pictures, well, they can really, suffer if they're dry. I was just supposed to water them only once, just now, today, because that should last them till... Okay, so I'll just do that then. Well, thank you, Nanny. I'm sure Mr. X appreciates that, and I do too. She retrieves her errant glass of champagne from the sideboard. I kneel and unplug the humidifier from the floor. Okay, then, I grunt, heaving the machine into my arms and letting myself out into the kitchen. I refill all 10 water tanks, schlepping them back and forth to the laundry room,
while Ella keeps right on trucking from "it was just one of those things" through "why can't you behave" and "I'm always true to you, darlin', in my fashion." My mind is reeling. This is not her house. This is not her family. And that most definitely was not her bedroom that she came out of.
"Are you done yet?"
she asks as I plug in the last one.
"Because I was wondering if you could run to the shop for me."
She follows me to the door as I grab my coat.
"Pierre forgot to get heavy cream."
"Thanks." She hands me a 20 as I open the door. I look down at the money and then at Grayer's little frog umbrella in the stand, the one that has two big frog eyes that pop up when he opens it. I hold the money out to her. "I can't. I have, an appointment, a doctor thing." I catch a glimpse of myself in the gilt mirror. "Actually, I just can't." Her smile strains.
"Keep it then,"
she says evenly. The elevator door opens while she attempts to look casual, leaning against the door frame. I put the bill down on the hall table. Her eyes flash.
"Look, Nanny, is it? You run home and tell your boss that you found me here, and all you'll be doing is saving me the trouble of leaving behind a pair of panties."
She steps back into the apartment, letting the door slam shut behind her.
"Like, literally panties?"
Sarah asks me the next day as she tries on yet another shade of pink lipstick at the Stila counter.
"I don't know. Do I have to look for them? I feel like I have to look for them. How much are these people paying you? I mean, do you have a line? Is there a line they could cross?"
Sarah is furiously puckering. "Too pink?"
"Baboon butt," I say. "Try one of the plummy shades," the makeup artist behind the counter suggests.
Sarah reaches for a tissue and starts over.
"Mrs. X is coming back tomorrow. I feel like there's something I'm supposed to be doing,"
I say, leaning against the counter in exasperation.
Quitting?"
"No, out here in the real world, where I pay rent."
"Toots!"
Sarah and I freeze and look across the atrium to where two piles of shopping bags are calling Sarah's high school nickname, which rhymes with boots. The bags make their way around the balcony toward us, parting to reveal Alexandra and Langley, two of our classmates from Chapin. Sarah and I exchange glances. In high school, they lived in Birkenstocks and followed the dead. Now they stand before us, Alexandra at nearly 6 feet and Langley at barely 5, in shearling coats, cashmere turtlenecks, and a shitload of Cartier.
"Toots!"
they cry again as Alexandra envelops Sarah in a big hug, nearly clonking her on the head with one of her shopping bags.
"Toots, what's up?"
Alexandra asks.
"So, do you have a man?"
Sarah's eyelids lift.
"No, well, I mean, there was someone, but..."
She's starting to sweat, foundation beating on her brow.
"I have a fabulous man. He's Greek. He's so gorgeous. We're going to the Riviera next week."
Alexandra coos.
"So what are you up to?"
she asks me. "Oh, same old, still working with kids."
"Huh,"
Langley says quietly.
"What are you going to do next year?"
"Well, I'm hoping to work with an after-school program." Their eyes narrow as if I had just switched languages unexpectedly. "Focusing on using creative arts as a tool for self-expression and building community?" I am getting completely blank looks.
"Kathy Lee's really involved,"
I offer as a last-ditch effort to... what?
"Right. What about you?"
Langley almost whispers to Sarah.
"I'm going to work at Allure." "Oh my God!"
they squeal.
"Well," Sarah continues, "I'm only going to be answering the phones, but..." "No! That's awesome! I love Allure,"
Alexandra says. "What are you guys doing next year?" I ask.
"Following my man," Alexandra says.
"Ganja," Langley says softly. "Well, we better run. We're meeting my mom at Cote Basque at 1.
"Oh, toots!"
Sarah is once again molested by Alexandra, and they head off to poke at their seafood salads.
"You're too funny," I say to Sarah.
allure.
Fuck 'em. Come on. Let's go eat somewhere fabulous. We decide to treat ourselves to a chic lunch of red wine and Robiola cheese pizzas at Fred's.
I mean, would you actually leave your underwear in someone's house?
Nan, Sarah says, shutting me up, I just don't understand why you care. Mrs. X works you like a mule and gave you dead animal headgear for a bonus. What is your loyalty?
Sarah, regardless of what kind of a whack job employer she might be, she's still Grayer's mom, and this woman is having sex with her husband in her bed and in Grayer's home. It makes me heartsick.
Nobody deserves that.
And that freak, she wants to get caught. What's up with that?
Well, if my married boyfriend was dawdling about leaving his wife, I guess I might want him to get caught, too.
So if I tell, Ms. Chicago wins, and Mrs. X will be devastated. If I don't tell, it's humiliating for Mrs. X. Nan, this is not even within a million miles of your responsibility. You don't have to be the one to tell her. Trust me, it's not in your job description.
But if I don't, and the panties are floating around, and she finds out that way, ugh, how awful.
Oh, my God, what if Grayer finds them?
She's so evil, I bet she'd put them somewhere he'd find them.
Nan, get a grip. How would he even know they were hers?
Because they're probably black and lacy and thonged, and he might not get it now, but one day he'll be in therapy, and it'll just kill him. Get your coat.
Sarah greets Josh in the front hall with a glass of wine. Welcome to Hunt the Panties, where we play for fabulous prizes, including earmuffs and a trip to the broom closet. Who's our first contestant?
Oh, me, Josh says as he takes off his jacket.
I am on my hands and knees in the front hall closet, looking through every coat, pocket, and boot. Nothing.
Jesus, Nan, this place is amazing. It's like the fucking Metropolitan Museum.
Yup, and about as cozy, Sarah says as I run frantically into the living room.
We don't have time to shoot the breeze, I call over my shoulder. Pick a room.
So, do we get points for any undergarments, or must they have a scarlet A on them? Josh asks.
Extra points for crotchless and edible,
Sarah explains the rules for the game I am not finding amusing.
All right, I say. Listen up. We are going to be methodical. We are going to start in the rooms that get the most use, where the panties would be uncovered the soonest. Joshua, you take the master bedroom, Mrs. X's dressing room, and her office.
Sarah Ann, reporting for duty, sir.
Kitchen, library, maid's rooms. I'll take the living room, the dining room, the study, and the laundry room, okay?
What about Grayer's room? Josh asks me.
Right. I'll start there.
I turn on each light as I pass, even the rarely used overheads, illuminating the darkest corners of the ex's home.
Nan, you can't say we didn't try, Josh says, passing me a cigarette as we sit by the recycling bins in the back stairwell. She was probably bluffing, hoping you'd tell Mrs. X so she can start redecorating.
Sarah lights another cigarette.
Besides, whoever finds them in this apartment deserves to find them. They're so well hidden. Are you sure this woman works with Mr. X and not the CIA?
She passes me back the lighter. Josh is still holding the porcelain Pekingese dog he picked up on his search.
Tell me again.
I don't know, $2,000, maybe $3,000, Sarah says.
Unbelievable. Why? Why? What am I missing?
He looks down at the dog in complete disbelief.
Wait, I'm going to go get something else.
You better put that back exactly where you found it, I say, too tired to chase after him to be sure he does.
I'm sorry I made you waste your night looking for panties, I say, stubbing out the cigarette on the metal railing.
Hey, she says, putting her arm around my shoulder. You'll be fine. The exes have jewelry that has jewelry. They'll be fine.
What about Grayer?
Well, he has you, and you've got HH.
Okay, I don't got nothing. I have an answering machine tape in my jewelry box and a plastic spoon I carry around in my purse as a souvenir, and that might be as far as it goes.
Yeah, sure.
Can I mention the plastic spoon at the wedding?
Honey, if we make it that far, you can carry the plastic spoon at the wedding.
Come on, let's get Josh and wipe our fingerprints on our way out of here.
When I get home, the answering machine is blinking. Hi, Nanny. It's Mrs. X. I don't know if you've left for Paris yet. I couldn't reach you on your cell phone again.
We may have to get you a new one with better coverage. I'm calling because Mr. X gave me a week at the Golden Door for Christmas. Isn't that wonderful? Lyford K is so awful, and I still haven't recovered from the holidays. I'm just exhausted, so I've decided to go next week. Mr. X will be around, but I was wondering if you'll be back, just so I can tell him you'll be available if he needs you, just so we know it's covered. I'll be in my room this evening. Call me. My first instinct is to call her and tell her never to leave her house again. Mrs. X? Hi, it's Nanny. Yes? I take a deep breath. So will that work? She asks. Of course, I say, relieved that she isn't asking about my house call. Great. So I'll see you Monday morning, a week from tomorrow. My flight's at 9, so if you could arrive by 7, that would be great. Actually, we better say 6:45, just to be on the safe side. I roll over for the 8th time in the last 15 minutes. I'm so tired that my body feels weighted, but every time I'm about to drift off, Grayer's hacking cough echoes through the apartment. I reach over to pull the clock back toward me, and the red numbers read 2:36 a.m. Jesus. I hit the mattress with my hand and roll onto my back. Staring up at the ex's guest room ceiling, I try to add up the few hours of sleep I've managed to get in the past 3 nights, and the total makes me even heavier. I'm bone-tired from spending 24/7 keeping Grayer entertained as his mood has blackened and fever risen. When I arrived, she greeted me at the elevator with a list in her hand, her bags already waiting in the limo downstairs. She just wanted to mention that Grayer had a tiny bit of an earache, and that his medicine was by the sink, along with his pediatrician's number, just in case. And the kicker? We really prefer that Grayer not sit in front of the television. You two have fun. I knew fun was hardly going to be the word for it as soon as I found him lying on the floor next to his train set, listlessly rolling a caboose on his arm. Any idea when Mr. X will be home tonight? I had asked Connie, dusting nearby.
Hope you brought your pajamas, she replied, wagging her head in disgust.
I've come to look forward to Connie's arrival over the past few days. It's a relief to have another person in the apartment, even if she is only a whir of dusting and vacuuming. As the temperature has held steady at 7 degrees Fahrenheit, we've been under house arrest since my arrival. This would have been bearable, ideal even, if H.H. hadn't had to go right back up to school for reading period. He said I could take Grayer upstairs to pet Max, but I don't think either one of them is up to it. Grayer's tiny earache may have improved, but his cough has only worsened. And, needless to say, his father has been completely MIA. He simply failed to return home my first night. Numerous phone calls to Justine have unearthed only the voicemail of a suite at the Four Seasons in Chicago. Meanwhile, the reception desk at the spa is screening Mrs. X's calls as if she were Sharon Stone. I took Grayer back to the doctor this afternoon, but his only advice was for Grayer to finish the pink amoxicillin and wait it out. Another round of raspy coughs. He's even more congested now than he sounded at dinner time. It's so dark and so late, and this place is just so big that I'm starting to feel as if no one will ever come back to get us. I get up, draping the cashmere throw around my shoulders like a cape, and shuffle over to the window. Pulling the heavy chintz drapes to the side, I let the streetlight from Park Avenue spill into the room and rest my forehead against the cold window pane. A cab pulls up to the building across the street, and a boy and girl stumble out. She's in tall boots and a skimpy jacket, leaning against him as they swerve past the doorman and into the building. She must be freezing. My forehead chills quickly from the glass, and I pull back, touching it with my hand. The curtain falls closed, taking the light with it. Nanny? Grayer's small, scratchy voice calls out. Yes, Grover, I'm coming, my voice echoes in the big room. I shuffle through the darkness of the apartment, lit up in weird shadows from passing cars outside. The warm glow of his Grover nightlight greets me along with the whir of his supersonic 2000 air filter. The minute I step through his doorway, my stomach drops. He is not okay.
His breathing is labored and his eyes are watering. I sit on the corner of the bed. Hey, sweetheart. I'm here. I put my hand on his forehead. It's boiling. The moment my fingers touch him, he starts to whimper. It's okay, Grover. You're just real sick, and I know it's yucky. But I don't know anymore. His wheezing alarms me. I'm going to pick you up now, Grover. I reach my arms under him, the cashmere wrap dropping to the floor. He starts to cry fully, the movement agitating him as I pull him up to me. I go into automatic pilot, running through options, the pediatrician, the emergency room, Mom. I carry him to the hall extension and lean against the wall for support as I dial. My mother answers on the second ring. Where are you? What's wrong? Mom, I can't get into it, but I'm with Grayer, and he's been sick with an ear infection and this cough, and they've had him on antibiotics, but the cough keeps getting worse, and I can't get a message through to Mrs. X because the receptionist says she's been in some sort of sensory deprivation tank all day, and he can't seem to breathe, and I don't know if I should take him to the hospital because his fever won't go down, and I haven't slept in 2 nights, and... Let me hear him cough. What? Put up the phone to his mouth so he can cough. Her voice is calm and steady. I hold the phone near Grayer's mouth, and within a second he has erupted into a deep cough. I feel the vibrations of this effort where his chest is pressed to mine. Oh, God, Mom, I don't know what to... Nanny, that's the croup. He has the croup, and you need to take a deep breath. You may not fall apart right now. Breathe with me. In. I focus on her voice, taking a deep breath in for Grayer and myself. And out. Listen, he's okay. You are okay. He just has a lot of fluid in his chest. Where are you right now? 721 Park Avenue? No. Where in the apartment? In the hall? Is this a cordless phone? No, she doesn't like the way they look. I can feel the panic start to well up again as he whimpers. Okay, I want you to go into his bathroom, turn on the shower so it's comfortably warm, not too hot, just warm, and then sit on the side of the bathtub with him in your lap. Keep the door closed so it gets nice and steamy. Stay in there until he stops wheezing. You'll see, the steam will help.